Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am so excited to be here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can lose weight by getting to what is eating at you instead of focusing on what you're eating. And today I have a super amazing guest. Shannon Farrar Griefer is an ultra runner with MS, multiple sclerosis. She's an author. She is a former fitness model. She is a motivational speaker. She does it all. She's a culinary chef, food stylist, and ultra marathon trailblazer. And I'm going to ask you what an ultra marathon is in a second. I know because Shannon's been on the show before, but she is amazing. She has done she's completed 7 Badwater 135-mile races. 135-mile races. Bad water, badass. Shannon, that's amazing. It is the most demanding extreme running race offered in the world. She's going to tell us more about this. She's also running with MS and has learned that food is a really important tool to heal her body, and just as running is there to heal your mind. So we're going to talk to Shannon about everything that she is up to. And if you want to join the show, if you have any questions for her, call in 818-602-4929. Join the show. So welcome, Shannon.
Thank you. Welcome back. Thank you for having me again.
So since I last saw you, you've gone back to culinary school and changed your life. Tell us about that.
Okay. So I was on treatment for my MS for a few years, and I decided that food might be a better choice to help heal my body, and I dove into culinary school. It was very strenuous. I enrolled in baking and cooking, and I thought if foods can heal you, foods can heal you, and I learned a lot about the science of food and started working with Wolfgang Puck Catering and just started working and just dove into it 100% like I do pretty much everything in my life, and I was in I've been in remission for 2 years, and then last month, I call it the monster, came back. So I'm just dealing with that right now. But, you know, running has been a big part of my life. It's been a metaphor for my, you know, fighting this disease. It's
running ultra marathons. I just tuned in.
Oh, running. We just lost our, something just happened. We just lost.
Can you hear me? Can you hear? Okay.
Okay, we're back. So I don't know what's happening.
I feel like that Saturday Night Light.
Yeah.
Something's happening.
Yeah. So, but running ultra marathons, which an ultra marathon, you know, your traditional marathon is 26.2 miles. An ultra marathon is distance 50K, 50 mile, 100K, and 100 mile. And then the granddaddy is the Badwater. It's 135 miles through Death Valley in July. It's deemed as the world's toughest foot race. It is. I believe it is. And in 2001, my first attempt at Badwater, I finished 5th woman. And then as the only woman, we finished at the portals of Mount Whitney. We started Badwater, which is the lowest elevation, 282 feet below sea level. And we finished at the portals of Mount Whitney. As the only woman, I continued, and I summited Mount Whitney, and then I decided to just run back.
She decided, I've done 135 miles. Why not do another?
What's 292? And it taught me a lot about the power of the mind, and you really can, like, overcome a lot with how powerful your mind is and your body. But like we say in ultra running, it's 80% mental. The other 20% is mental.
Well, yeah, mostly mental, a little bit physical. Yeah. And it's the same with, you know, overcoming any kind of eating issues. Yeah. Everyone thinks it's about food. And that's why I say, no, it's about what's eating at you. And I know you have your own history of eating disorders. And you, I know that you learned that running was your sort of your way of escaping.
Yeah, when I was in my late teens, I weighed in at 90 pounds, maybe 90 pounds with clothes on. I'm about 110 right now, but when I go into a 100-mile race, I like to get up to about 120 just to have some extra fat stored in case my body doesn't want to eat after 50 miles or so. And food's been, you know, I've learned as an athlete how important food is, and I've learned about my body, you know, just being so in tune with my body. What I feel like when you're pregnant, you crave something, it means your body's needing that food. So I've learned about, you know, just loving food as opposed to it was my enemy before. And when I would eat, I would do everything to get that food out of me. And now I just, you know, culinary school's helped me really appreciate food. To me, it's an art. Being a chef, food is an art. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we need. And I've tried every diet. I don't believe in diets. I believe it's
no,
a lifestyle.
No diets. Wait a minute. Here's my thought on diets. Here's my thought on diets. Ooh, bad. No diets. No diet.
Just it's a lifestyle, and I change the way I eat according to if I have a race coming up or just I love entertaining Scott, my boyfriend, and Scott, who has cancer. So you know, he's has his struggles. He's on chemo 3 weeks out of four. So we really try to eat healthy, live a stress-free life. Love heals. And having a positive attitude, I think, really helps. And, you know, I'm really in a bad flare-up right now. And I'm just trying to keep, you know, my mind in a good place and think of all the great things in my life and know that this time shall pass. It's like mile 80 and a 100-mile run. Right. I'm in that pain cave, but it'll pass. And just you've got to keep moving forward. And there's a lot of people mm-hmm. that have it much worse than I do. And those are the people that I run for. I'm very fortunate, I feel, you know, we're getting ready to put a garden in our backyard, and just having passion in life has really helped too. It allows you to grasp onto something, and that's, you know, my running and being a mom and having Scotty and my garden and cooking. And
you have a very full life, Shannon. So, but something you just said really struck me. You know, you said like at mile 80, you have to remind yourself, you're at mile 80, you've just run 80 miles, and you have basically 80 more miles to go, or mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah.
My math has never been my strong suit, so something like that. And how do you keep going? Because that's such a metaphor for life, where when we're not where we want to be, we've come a long way. I like to say, like, there's a ladder of life, and it's really important to look down and say, wow, I was there, and I've come all the way to here. Good for me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I want to get there, but let me appreciate where I am now. And I think that's where people have a hard time. So say they've lost 80 pounds, and they have another 80 pounds more to go, or they've lost 5 pounds, and another 5 pounds more to go, whatever it is. It's like, how do you focus on where you are as opposed to I'm not yet where I want to go?
I think taking baby steps is really important. You know, setting goals is a great, it's a dream. I think a goal is a you know, dream with a deadline. And I think that you just set baby steps. And, you know, sometimes you have setbacks. I've started several 100-mile races where I didn't finish, even a few miles from the finish line.
Wow.
So you learn from that. You grow from that. But I think that, you know, when you can set a goal and just keep striving for that goal, and, yeah, there's going to be setbacks. But you know what? You grow from those, and you just keep going. And yeah, mile 80, when I want to quit, you know, people say, mile 80, and you know, you have 20 more miles to go. I just say, look, I've come this far. And I'm always running for charity. So I'm running for children with cancer. I'm running for children with autism. And I think about those children. And I can quit anytime during my race when I'm hurting. Children with cancer and children with autism, they just can't say, hey, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
So I run for people that can't just say, hey, it hurts, or I'm tired, I'm giving up. I don't give up. You don't give up. Just know that there's someone out there that just hasn't, you know. I'm very fortunate, and I think MS has taught me a lot, and I have no self-pity, and that comes from my ultra running, that I just keep going, and it's taught me to live in the moment, and I never did that before. I've always, like, had, you know, my calendar was full. I do have a 100-mile race planned for the end of October, but my training, I have not been able to run this past month. And I don't sit there and go, oh, poor me. I'm like, you know what? I just do what I can do. I have our friends over. I cook. I find that other passion that keeps me happy.
Balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing like having sort of a catastrophic disease to reset your priorities. And I also was just sharing with Shannon that I dealt with an autoimmune disease the last 5 months called pemphigus vulgaris, and it was horrendous, the worst thing I've ever been through. And I've had breast cancer, way worse than that. But it really taught me what is, so when I talk about being in the moment and appreciating where you are, I'm not just telling it, I've lived it. I also, why I wanted to have you back on the show particularly, was the idea of food as healing. Because I treat eating disorders, I have the show, I talk to people all the time about it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating at you. And yet, you still have to eat, and people are like, what do I eat? How do I eat? And often people have a combative relationship with food.
Yeah.
And learning that food is healing is so, so important. So yeah. Talk about that.
Well, I just feel like everybody, like, as I said before, I don't believe in diets. I just believe in a lifestyle, but everybody has to find that food lifestyle that fits their lifestyle, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, you see obesity has gone up in with children, and just, it's, you know, when we were growing up, we would be out riding our bikes in the street and stuff like that. Now kids are on video games and playing all this stuff. And I think that it's important, you know, to have a healthy home. And, like, you know, just my pantry is, you know, we're full of, you know, healthy foods, and the refrigerator's full of healthy foods. And people have to find that food that they like. And it's okay to live a little. Like, you know, if you splurge, so what? Don't beat yourself up, you know. But it's, you know, food has been a big part of my life. On the bad side, and now it's on, you know, it's my friend. I love it. I love to cook. I love to entertain. I love, you know, to go into the market and pick up fruits and just, you know, want to test them and see what, I just play with food all day.
So food as medicine, how did you come to that recognition of not just food as let's be healthy, but really food as healing?
Because food can make you sick too. So I felt that if food can make you sick, it can also make you better. And it's helped me with my MS. It really has. Yeah. Eating foods, I find that foods that are hot and spicy, you know, and like hot foods, and I've traveled to, like, you know, Morocco and Spain and Italy, and I've worked with chefs in Spain, and I've learned about their culture and food, and I believe, you know, I follow more of a plant-based, you know, way of eating. But everybody has their food that they like, and food that I think, foods that make me feel better. You know, foods I know how to eat a week before I'm coming up to a 100-mile race. I'm going to change the way I eat as opposed to how I would eat every day.
Okay, so I'm interested. So you're gonna do a 100-mile race or 130 miles or 5 miles or whatever. Mm-hmm. What do you do differently before the race?
Well, if it's a 100-mile race, I'm going to eat more calories, just put more food in my body, because there will come a time in a race where your stomach does not want to eat food, or you, in Death Valley, 135-mile race, it's hard to chew. Everything hurts. Your eyelashes hurt out there. Everything hurts. It's like I tell my crew, I said, can you just chew this up for me like a mama bird? But I just eat differently. I eat differently, like we're going to Hawaii in a couple weeks. So I'm kind of like, okay, got to get that little bikini body.
So. Oh, come on, Shannon. You know, everyone has a bikini body. You know how you get a bikini body? You put a bikini on your body.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
but for training, mm-hmm. So you just like eat more, and it's more like, okay, this is going to be fuel if you need it on your race.
Yeah, food
rather
is fuel.
So
I'll eat more like salmon or peanut butter, you know, fatty, healthy fat foods. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm not going to sit there and eat a bag of chips or, right. You know, I'm not going to do that. And it's funny because the aid stations at our races, when you, the Badwater race is a self-supported race. So we bring a crew and we are in a van, we bring our own food. But these ultra marathons, the 100-mile races, we're running through the mountains. So there's aid stations every 10 to 15, 20, whatever. They're all different. So, but at the aid stations, there's like potato chips and candy. But it's like, you know, you crave that salt, or, you know, I would never eat sugar, you know, during a race. But maybe at mile 95, I can do it because I'm not going to bonk. You know, I mean, I'm already bonked.
Bonked. So. Yeah, I'd say you're bonked. Wow. Yeah. So when you went to culinary school, what surprised you about, you know, like, what did you not expect being in culinary school?
I learned about, you know, like foods, there's a science behind foods. If foods can ferment and things can create, you can create this dough to rise or just something. There's a science behind food, and that's really why I dove into culinary school. I wanted to learn about that. and see if it could help heal my body from, you know, the MS. There's no cure. Right. I was on treatment with daily injections. I had to go on respiratory treatment. I had a cane.
What's that? So I have to interrupt you, because what's that like to go from being like, you know, this first woman doing these marathon, ultra marathon runs and all of that you've done to having to use a cane? Like, what does that do to you psychologically?
Well, when I was first diagnosed, my doctor told me I'd be in a wheelchair in a year. So when I had a cane, I said, you know what? I have a cane. Deal with it. And I would just, there's nothing you can do. I just, you know, of course, it sets you back a little bit. But again, I think of the people that are in a wheelchair and I'm still walking. I feel that, you know, I'm very blessed. And I feel that I can, I'm a fighter. I've been a fighter all my life since I was 10. And I had issues, you know, with abuse when I was 10 years old. And I think that that kind of gave me the tools to always be a fighter and a survivor. And it's taught me how to detach from pain and feel that I can beat anything. And the cane was, you know, I threw it away. I didn't like looking at it, but I had to use it. I had no choice. You know, I just had no choice. And it was kind of strange, but one day I wanted to just go walk in the mountains because that's kind of my healing place. And the mountains are like a gym to me. I see everybody, we talk, but people saw, I went out in the mountains with my cane walking, and people would look at me, but they couldn't say anything to me. And I could never figure that out, you know, but I feel like people, when they see you so healthy too, it's like not only, yeah, I can go run 100 miles, but when people see you so healthy and then they see you like this, or they hear that, you know, oh my God, no, my identity was the ultra marathon runner. Now I'm the ultra runner with MS. I'm fine with that because I'm still running. I mean, I'm in a flare up right now, but it'll pass. I'm still hoping that I can run the 100 mile race at the end of October. If I do, it'll qualify me for Badwater, which will be my 8th Badwater.
And Badwater is the 135 mile race, the one that you did, and then you went back and you ran back.
Yeah, so I was the first one in the world to run, to double the official Badwater.
And by the way, which is 292 miles.
Yeah.
What? And only 100 runners in the world are selected
each year,
by a race committee to compete. So it's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. But you know what? It really shows you the power of the mind out there. You really tap into your soul and you see what you're made of. And that's what I love. I always say at mile 80, okay, let's see what you're made of. My race, MS has humbled me. But you know what? Mile 80, that humbles you too.
Yeah.
So I've been humbled, but I get right back up. I've fallen 99 times and got back up 100. So,
well, that's the secret to success.
Yeah. Like
there's some Chinese proverb, or maybe it's Japanese, or someone said it, like, fall down 7 times, get back up 8.
Yeah, that's why when you say, like, what do you tell people? Just, hey, you're going to fall back. You're going to fall down. Get back up.
Well, what really strikes me is how you have an encouraging attitude towards yourself. So many people who struggle with food have this battle. It's like a battle between themselves and their bodies, right? They hate their bodies. They hate that they let themselves eat whatever. They're not interested in why. They're just in a constant battle zone. And you can't feel good about yourself when you're attacking yourself.
No.
And so that is very resonant for me, what you're saying, that you don't attack yourself, you encourage yourself.
Yeah, I used to hate my body. I wish I'd loved my body back then. It's not that I love my body, but I feel like it's given me so much. It's allowed me to run. It's 3 babies. I mean, I feel like I'm just, you know, people don't appreciate their body when we're younger. I don't think a lot of women really have issues with their body.
And men,
yeah. And I wish that, gosh, I wish I could go back and when I was 20 and go, God, look at me. You know, I was.
What would you say if you went back to your 20-year-old self who was self-hating or body-hating? What would you say to her?
I said, look at your body. Look what it's giving you. It's beautiful. Enjoy it. You know, make the best of it. You know, stay fit. And, I was a fitness model on ESPN and did several fitness shows and stuff. And I just, you know, I take care of my body. I have to take care of it more now, you know, and stay away from stress if we can. That's a big, big with any disease, I believe, is if you can't stay away from stress and exercise. And I've always been, you know, I'm a tomboy, so I've always been, you know, like, you know, active and riding horses and my skateboard and surfing and California girl. So I, you know, I've been outdoors a lot, and I think that's really important, just people to get out and be active and love your body and just know, you just never know. Hey, look, at one day you might have a diagnosis.
Yeah, there's nothing like a diagnosis of an autoimmune disorder, whether it's MS or PV, which I hadn't. People have, there's so many autoimmune diseases out there, and cancer and all kinds of things. And you, believe me, you reset your priorities. You're not caring what size you are when you get a diagnosis like that.
No, you
just want to.
Change definitely.
You just want to feel good.
I'm happy when I can wake up and just take a deep breath in and exhale slowly. So when I was on treatment, I was mentioned that I had to go on respiratory treatment, and then I had a nurse that would come to my house and give me 3 days of steroids through an IV. And, you know, so I appreciate every day. Every day that I wake up, I'm happy, I'm grateful, I'm blessed. I try to focus on all the good things in my life, and there's a lot, you know. We all have to just think of three great things in your life.
What are your three great things?
My children, my Scotty, and just my family. I have a lot. Can I give you more?
Yes. Why limit it to three?
My running.
30.
People that held my hand when I was on IVs, and just, you know, that my friends and my family, and having Scott in my life and having love in your life. It's really helpful to just have someone by your side, especially when you're not feeling great.
Last time you were here, I don't think you had a Scotty.
No, I didn't.
No.
I didn't have a Scotty. And so he's really helped me. And as I mentioned, he has cancer. So, you know, I see his struggles too. It's heartbreaking, but we're both strong and we're fighters. And, you know, he's an ex-athlete to ex-hockey player. So, you know, we have that, I think we have the ability to fight and to keep on keeping on, as we say in my sport.
Absolutely. Well, if any of you guys have questions for this very inspiring woman, Shannon, please give us a call, 818-602-4929. Ask about anything about her experience with MS, her experience as a runner, her experience overcoming eating disorders. We could talk about anything. So 818-602-4929 is the number, and we look forward to welcoming your calls. So, tell me this. What is your biggest challenge as far as training? Now, I hear a lot about how you encourage yourself and you motivate yourself, but I'm sure a lot of people out there are like, yeah, I can't even get myself to the gym, and I can't tell myself, oh, I love myself into the gym. So for you, what is your biggest challenge, and how do you break through and motivate yourself?
My biggest challenge is just, you know, like getting on a schedule and just sticking to a schedule. When I have a race coming up, my biggest challenge is now I can't run. So I'm wondering, how long is this going to last? I have a 100-mile race at the end of October. I would love to be out in the mountains running every day, and I, you know, but I can't right now. So I have a bike. I do other things. So my biggest challenge is just always trying to exercise. But if I can't, I can't beat myself up about it, because I can't, because I have this little MS thing happening. But my biggest challenge is, you know, when I'm feeling good, is just getting out and trying to, you know, focus on that race. Before I get to that race, I've already mentally run the race, because when I train, that's what my mind goes to. It's like, okay, I'm in the race. And it mentally, I believe in visualization is really important. So I see myself, you know, running that race and getting through the hurdles, and I want to see myself at mile 80. I want to pull out of that pain cave. I want to get back on my feet. And, you know, people just need to have a goal. They need to make and commit to that goal. It's easy to do once you get started, and once you see the results and you see that you find something that you like and that you enjoy. You don't have to be a runner. It could be anything. You could be a gardener. Just find a passion that makes you feel good. Like, it's so rewarding to me with my garden to see a tomato and pull a tomato off and make a sauce out of it.
I grew that. Wow.
So, But as far as fitness, yeah, a lot of people don't like to exercise, and it's really probably the most important thing that you could do to yours for your body.
And part of that, I think people think exercising, they think pain, they think difficulty, they think, oh, I don't want to go to the gym and be seen. I don't want to look in the mirror. I don't want to look at those other people who are also fit, and I'm going to look at myself and I'm going to feel bad, so I'm not going to go. What would you say to someone like that?
Probably those people started the same way. Those people that you're looking at, they might still think that way. You know, just don't worry about other people. Just take care of your body. Just take care of yourself. Don't worry about other people, what they look like, what they think, what you think. Just take care of your body and have your own. Like when I'm running a race, when people pass me, I'm like, oh no, why is she passing me? You know, I've been running longer than her. I should have more experience. But I just think about me. It's my race. Right. Have your training, your fitness schedule be your schedule. Your body is your body. You can't change it and make it look like someone else's. You could change it to make it how you want it to look, and that's
through, and feel,
and feel. That's through food, and that's through fitness. And yeah, it's easy to lay, you know, not go to the gym or lay in bed or whatever, sit on the couch. But once you start a routine,
hold that thought. We have a caller, and hi caller, Nicole.
Hi.
I recognize her phone number. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, Dr. Nina. Hi, guest.
Hi. Shannon.
Shannon. Sorry. Couldn't remember.
Shannon Farrar Griefer.
She was?
Her name is Shannon Farrar hyphen Griefer.
Hi, Nicole.
Okay, got it. Hi there. So I was kind of listening a little bit. I don't have any questions about MS specifically, but I am really interested about how you overcame your eating disorder and what advice you have for, you know, people in their 20s who kind of struggle with food and eating disorders in general, and just like how to kind of go about it and how you overcame yours.
Okay, Nicole. I struggled with eating disorders most of my teens. And I think it was stemmed from what happened to me when I was 10. And I just, you know, I got married and I knew that I had to live a healthier life. And I dove into culinary school back in 89. It was that kind of helped me to learn about food and to appreciate food. And it's a lot of women struggle. I mean, I know friends that struggle now. I'm 58 years old. I have a lot of friends that struggle, you know, not an age thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's we just have to learn to really appreciate your body and just find foods that make you feel good. And and just, how old are you, Nicole, may I ask?
I'm 27.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a friend that has an eating disorder?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people around me, just living in LA, I feel like I'm surrounded by everybody that has something with food, you know, and it's kind of hard to say on live radio, but I kind of suffered with something that was kind of, well, actually, I think I said it on the show before, like chewing and spitting. I don't really do it anymore, but it wasn't anorexia, so I wasn't not eating, but I also wasn't like swallowing and then purging either. It was just more like,
it's a very chewing. It's a subclinical eating disorder, but it's very common. Mm-hmm. And you know what the most common eating disorder is, by the way? Binge eating disorder.
Right.
It's more prevalent than anorexia and bulimia combined.
Yeah.
So a lot of people struggle with food.
Do you have a passion?
Someone I know, who's really close to me has binge eating disorder. And the other day she said to me, she's like, "You're so lucky that you don't suffer from that." And I was like, I'm sorry that you suffer from that, but don't worry, I suffer from other things.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So,
do you have any?
And I actually just started. No, sorry, go ahead.
Do you have any passions in life? What are your passions? Tell me.
Yeah, of course.
What do you
my
love
passions.
To do?
I love dancing. I love exercising. I love moving my body. I take Zumba classes,
That's
which
awesome.
I love.
That's great.
Yeah, I do Pilates. Mm-hmm. I like walking. I like working. I love making money.
Good. So you have a lot to be grateful for. And take care of that body. you know, just it's really important. I'm 58 and I wish, like I said, it was, you know, I wish I really looked back at my teens and thought, wow, look what I did to my body. I was so self-destructive. And, you know, your body, it's your vehicle in life. And you got to take care of it. Pretend it's a Ferrari. And just, you know, it's beautiful like a Ferrari. Just think how beautiful it is. And just look in the mirror and just, you know, tell yourself that, you know, wow, I'm beautiful. I'm here. I can do Zumba. I can do all those great things. And that's your body, you know, allowing you to do that. So learn to love your body. It's the only one you got.
If you don't take care of your body, where will you live?
Yeah.
I can't take credit for that. I read it on Instagram a lot. But yeah.
I love so many things you said. I love the Ferrari analogy, like take care of your body like it's a Ferrari. And I love that you said pay attention to what foods make you feel good, like what makes you feel good. Like,
yeah.
I like that, just being intuitive and wanting to feel good and stay healthy and loving your body. So
yeah,
it's just hard to kind of stay in check with so many.
It is. And
people,
you know what, right.
I have my own issues, and then so many people who are close to me, like family and close friends, have their stuff, and then it's like all our stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
And you're right, you know, living in LA, you know, Hollywood, everyone, you know, but it's a kind of a facade, you know, a lot of people that, you know, they can get things done to make their body better. You don't have to do that. Just do it through food and fitness. You know, most metropolitan states, you know, where it's coastal, your people are in bathing suits a lot. They're exposing their legs more. And so we're in California where we're, you know, around beautiful people and movie stars and people that, you know.
Yeah.
So.
But none of them actually look how they look in Instagram.
No,
though.
No.
That point must be made.
Yeah. So just, you know what? No, you go on.
No, I was just going to say, I don't know if this is like relevant, but did you ever try like appetite suppressants or Adderall or anything like that? Like, do you have any recommendations or advice when it comes to that? Because I know a lot of people abuse that.
No.
And I just kind of wanted to get your take. Okay.
I just All think right, just the healthier you can, the healthier foods and stuff you could put in your body, the better. And it's hard to stay away. That's why I asked if you have passions, because I think that if you can grasp onto those passions and focus your mind on that as opposed to, you know, food is your friend. It really is. It's maybe, you know, start looking on, you know, the internet about food, about going on Instagram about food and learning how to make, you know, recipes and learning how to love food and plate food. And food is an art. Look at food as your friend and not your enemy, because you need it to live. And the more healthier you are is going to come from, you know, eating healthy foods and keep doing your Zumba classes and all the things that you're doing, and just have a really positive attitude. And yeah, just look in the mirror and just say, hey, I'm beautiful. And my body's beautiful. And know that people, you're not, you know, when I was having my issues with eating disorders, I knew I wasn't alone. Just know that you're not alone.
Yeah.
A lot of people have this. Just, you know, you can contact me anytime you want to talk, you know, but
okay,
just know that you're
so
not
much.
Alone.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Just take that Ferrari and go for a nice ride right now.
Develop an appetite for life.
Yeah.
I think is what she's saying. Yeah. And when you have an appetite for life, you're not going to be so focused on whatever you're eating.
Exactly. Exactly. Take care.
Thank you.
Nice
thank you. Thank you.
You.
Thank you.
You're
also,
very
Dr.
Welcome.
Nina, I just started reading your book, but I'll call next week and talk to you about your book.
Oh, awesome. Well,
okay.
I hope to hear good things. No pressure.
I think you will.
Ask me anything.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys.
Bye.
Go
Thanks
Zumba.
Again.
Thank you.
I appreciate you guys.
Bye. You too.
All right. Bye.
Take care.
She's amazing. She calls every week, and I think she speaks for so many people out there, her age and any age, who are in that
nice
battle zone.
That, you know, you're not alone. That's with anything, that any struggle. You know, I remember when I was doing my first 100-mile race, it was 20-mile loops, and we had to do it 5 times. But every time you would get to the headquarters, you would see your car, and you're like, that mile 60, that car looked really good. Mile 80, that car looked even better. And I knew I had to go out and do one more loop. And so this guy comes up to me at the time. He had the course record for Badwater. His name was Gabriel. I'm like, Gabriel, I can't do this anymore. I just can't do it. I can't. I'm hurting. I have blisters on my feet. I'm tired. And he goes, Shannon, shut up. Everybody's hurting out here. And I'm like, oh, really? Okay, then that's all I needed to hear. Because I'm like, okay, I'm going on. Because I knew that, you know. So it's nice to know that you're not alone, you know. So
whatever pain you're in, whether physical or emotional, someone out there can relate. Someone out there gets it.
Yeah. So I get what she's going through. I've been there. Yeah, and I see a lot of friends. I have a lot of friends that are struggling with eating disorders. I cook for them, and I teach them how to eat. That's what I want to do with people. It's like teach them how to have a healthy lifestyle and learn to love food. And one way by doing that is cooking and just going to the market and just, I love, I'm like, you can find me in the produce section.
Oh, that was you in Bristol Farms? I thought so.
I'll be in there for like 2 hours. It's like, are you still here, lady?
Well, and eating disorders are really not about food, right? Eating is the solution to the problem. It is not the problem.
It's the control.
Well, it can be a lot of things. Yeah. Sometimes it can be a lot of things.
Yeah.
But they're not, it's really not. It's the solution to the problem. It's not the problem. Yes. And then when you resolve the problem, now how do you, like a lot of people
find
are like,
the root where that came from. Where did that come from? And solve go
that.
From there. Exactly.
And then find a new relationship to food, which is what you have done, which is it's supposed to, people also, I don't know, this might drive you as crazy as it drives me, people who are like, oh, food is just fuel. I shouldn't like it. I should just eat to fuel my body. That's it. And I'm always like, no, you're supposed to like it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, to me, I mean, being an athlete, food is very important to me. I have to, you know, eat certain ways, but food is fuel. When I run, I need it. And as I mentioned, I have to fatten up a little bit before a race because my body might just not want to eat. It happens a lot. I've lost 12 pounds in a race one time. So I actually got pulled out of the race. But just keep, you know, people focus too much on food too.
Well, it should be enjoyed.
Yeah.
Right? It's something, it's supposed to be delicious. It's not supposed to be like, you know, just fuel.
Yeah.
If it was fuel, we'd be eating astronaut packets.
That's why I say it's art. Food is art. And learn how to, like, learn about food. Buy a great cookbook and just learn how to plate food. And it's like a canvas. Your plate's a canvas. And just make it beautiful.
What does plating mean for when you say learn how to plate food? Is that?
Okay, so you see that food. You taste it with your eyes before you taste it. Because you're plating food. It's really important. That was fun when I worked with Wolfgang Puck Catering. I worked with some really great chefs, but they're all about, I mean, their food. You look at food and it's beautiful. And plating is, you know, just making it art. It's art on a plate. It's food is art on a plate. And
so aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah,
it should look.
Yeah, it just should look beautiful.
Delicious.
And I follow all these great chefs and I just love, I'm obsessed with watching their plating. And I love doing that. So that's what I love about food, too. And my friends come over, they're like, oh, my God, that's so beautiful. Nicolette Sheridan's my neighbor, and I always cook for her and her boyfriend. And it's great because she's always taking pictures of my food and just really fun. But I just love food now, and I'm happy that I love it. I went through so many years struggling, not loving it. And the best part, I think, what really changed it was being an athlete. That's why I was telling Nicole, like focus on, you know, you need that food, you know, to get you through those Zumba classes. You need food to get you through life. Your body is your only body that you're going to get this lifetime.
Right.
So take care of it.
Right.
Love it. Learn to love it, you know.
Instead of attacking it.
Instead of attacking it, yeah. But you've got to find the root from where that came from. Why do you hate food?
Why do you hate your body? Mm-hmm. Why do you hate, food is so symbolic, but that's, you know, something I talk about a lot on the show. But as far as with you, like, what surprised you? What is the hardest challenge you've faced, not on a race, but like in the race of life?
Because my MS.
You need, what I'm thinking is you need people. Like, what comes up over and over as you're talking about food,
yeah,
is you're talking about feeding your friends, making things for people, having people over. Yeah. So often people who struggle with food do it in, you know, in a hidden way,
yeah,
away from everyone else.
Yeah.
Like getting their kids to get out of the kitchen so they can eat the cookie dough before the kids come back, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, secret eating. But when you're talking about it, how social it is really
well, yeah,
amazing.
I mean, look at how wonderful it is to have a great dinner party. And it's all based on that, you know, your friends getting together and, you know, having this beautiful dinner and table set. And to me, that's so rewarding. I love just having I cook for all my friends, and I, you know, I'm willing to, if anyone has any issues with their pantry and refrigerator, you can call me. I will come over and show you how to eat and take out all the bad foods and take you to the market and bring in what, you know, suits your lifestyle, whether, you know, single mom or your family, whatever. I can help you. I can show you how to eat healthy, and I would love to do that. And you don't have to pay me, but just make a donation to a great charity.
Oh, wow. That's so beautiful. So what are some of the bad foods that you see? Even though I'm always saying there's no good food or bad food, more like, you know, obviously you want to eat healthy, and if you eat a bad food, don't feel bad about yourself. But if you're going through someone's pantry, what is the quote-unquote bad food that you see most often that you tell people to get rid of?
Food that has no nutritional value, but I don't want to say bad foods, because there really aren't any bad foods. It's how you eat them. Like, I believe in balance and moderation and variety. Yeah, do I eat potato chips once in a while? Yeah. Am I going to buy the baked potato chips? Yeah. But, you know, I mean, you can't just really say, I don't think there's, I mean, there are foods that they're bad when you overindulge. And but I mean, I believe in, you know, foods that are, you know, plant-based is really where I like to go with my food. But I have chips in my pantry. I have, you know.
That's plant-based.
Yeah, of course it is. It came from a potato.
Exactly. It's practically a vegetable. It is a vegetable. Exactly. You're eating your vegetables.
That's so funny. You're right. With a little salt. So
potassium.
Getting my minerals.
There you go. It's actually a health food.
So, but food is just, you know, just if you can, I think people really, if they can enjoy cooking and the process of food, and what it really boils down to is cooking food and learning about food, it will become your friend. And, you know, just enjoy plating, making art out of food, making it beautiful and taste good. And what I like to do is convert those high fatty, non-nutritional, so-called bad foods into a healthier version. You know, yeah, you can make a stroganoff healthy. You know, you can make...
You can.
Yeah, you can.
Can you make lasagna healthy?
You sure can. Lasagna is very healthy. I think if people can really learn about food, and, you know, I went to culinary school. It was very intense. It was 30 weeks. And, you know, coming home at 1 o'clock in the morning or 4:30 from catering events in the morning, it really changed my body clock and my messed up my training. But it was really what I needed to do. I kind of, you know, just kind of had to have a little just change in my life. I went through a second divorce. And
yeah, I think you were here right after that.
Yeah, it was short term. And I kind of had to reinvent myself. And, you know, it's not, being a chef isn't really age discriminating, or it's like, you know, I'm 58 years old. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a single mom at 50, you know, six. What am I going to do? So I, you know, went to culinary school. I knew I could do something, whether, you know, I'm writing a cookbook right now. So, and I've, you know, been a private chef. So, and I've, you know, worked with some great chefs catering and working in, you know, Shenzhen, Maine. And I'm very fortunate. And I feel that just food is really a big part of my life. Like, it's, you know, just as important as my running. Mm-hmm. So, and that's big to say, because my running has really been a big part of my life. I've been fortunate. I ran my first marathon when I was 35. So
wow.
It's never too late to start anything. Oh, it's never too late to start. I hated running before. you know. But I ran my first marathon at 35, my first 100-miler, I think I was 39. And I've done 7 Badwaters. I've done numerous 100-mile races. And I'm continuing to, you know, I keep that on my calendar that, you know, this race coming up. Hopefully this flare-up will go away. I have a doctor appointment with UCLA on the 12th, so we'll go from there. They'll probably want to put me back on treatment, but I'm still looking for those foods that can help heal, and I'm doing a lot of research. I'm my own guinea pig right now, so for me and then hopefully for others too.
Well, you're also such an amazing example of it's never too late to start something or to continue something, because so many people say to me, oh, but I'm, you know, I'm 48 or I'm 65, this is it, or I'm 70 or I'm 30, it's too late for me. I mean, no matter what age they are, they say, oh, I'm cooked, right? There's no growth from here. But there is. I mean, to see you, you're 58 years old, you're going to run 100+ miles, 135 miles in October, maybe, or
100 miles in October. October. And it'll qualify me for the Death Valley race. Yeah.
Okay. 135. I'm sure that when you're at 100 miles, feels a lot different than I have 35 more miles to go.
Actually, in the Death Valley race, I usually start feeling good around mile 90. It's funny. My pacers are like, because all of a sudden I'll pick up my pace, or like there's cutoffs. So we have to be at mile 122 at a certain time. Oh. And so one time I had like 10 minutes to get to mile 122, and it was a little over a mile away. I'm like, okay, I got to pull off a 9-minute mile right now. And I have,
wow,
100.
At 122 miles. Wow.
I did it. And it was kind of funny, because then the next stretch is from mile 122 to the portals, which is mile 135. It was my fastest time going up that nice little climb to the portals. But I forgot what year, but I think 2015, I had a flare-up, and my doctor gave me 3 days of steroids, IV steroids. My nurse was with me for 3 days. The second day, I wanted to go on a walk, and I fell, and I had 8 stitches in my leg. So I call my crew. I'm like, okay, girls, the race is less than 4 weeks out. I'm in bed with 8 stitches in my leg. I'm on IVs. The race is 4 weeks away, and I can't train. My leg has to be elevated. And they're like, well, you're not going to go to Death Valley and run, are you? I said, let's just go out there and just go and see what we can do. And so my team, it was funny, 3 girls. I have Jen Shelton, Connie Gardner, and Dina Castor, who's a silver and bronze medalist. So they're thinking, we just want to support Shannon. It's going to be her last race. And so I was surprised. I was inducted into the Hall of Fame that year. But so 2 of my girls, they thought, okay, she's not going to make it past mile 42, so they got permits to climb the mountain. So here, the race started on Tuesday night. They got permits for Wednesday. So I made it to the finish line with a sling in my arm, because my arm was taking a nap that day from my MS. So I ran the whole race with a sling, but I made the best of it because it was a great place to put my water bottle. And I made it to the finish line, and everybody was shocked that I could do that, because I really couldn't run the month before. And my doctor said, you can't run. Your leg's not healed from the scar. You're going to have the ugliest scar. I said, I'm going to just give it a shot. And you know what? It felt good just to be around my ultra running community. It's what gives me strength. You know, my running really gives me a strength. That's why when I had to go in the mountains with my cane, those are my healing grounds. It's where I find peace and serenity and strength and power, and it's my home. So
it's very, you're so inspirational, Shannon. I love that you don't let anything stop you. You don't say anything about, like, I mean, age is just, it really is just a number, right? And you don't let MS stop you, and you don't let anything, life hurdles, stop you.
Unstoppable.
Your races are a metaphor for how to live a life.
Yeah. They are. And they taught me how to deal with overcoming hurdles. Like when you're in a funk in a 100-mile race, sometimes those funks can last for hours. And, you know, you're in pain, you're fatigued, you're looking down at your feet, and there's blood oozing out of your shoes from the blisters, and you're chafed, and you just find that strength to go on.
What do you say to yourself?
I think of the children that I run for. Like, look, you can quit. You can quit. These kids can't quit when they're feeling that, you know. One time I was running the Death Valley race, and I went to the children's hospital. I was volunteering at Ronald McDonald House. And this little boy, Michael, came up to me, and he lost a leg to cancer, and he came up with his crutches, and he had a little Superman shirt on. And he said, "Shannon, are you still running those 100-mile races?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, you know, typical question, "Where do you go to the bathroom?" "Wherever you want." And they're like, "What do you eat or drink?" I said, "Well, you know, I eat whatever they have at the aid stations and, you know, just whatever they have, like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or whatever." And then he goes, "What's the hardest part for you?" And I said, "Usually around mile 80 because just everything hurts and I'm complaining." And he interrupts me. He goes, "Will you promise me you'll never give up?" And there's this little boy that lost his leg to cancer. And I'm like, okay. So I thought about him the entire time. Okay, so I think, you know, just very important to really focus on all the good things that you have in your life. And that's helped me a lot. Like my little MS flare-up right now, it'll be gone one day. I'll be back running in those mountains. It's not going to stop me from, you know, anything. It's just making me think, wow, I'm pretty fortunate that I'm, you know, living with a disease that I can handle. And I hope to inspire others to never give up on anything, you know, whether
you have definitely inspired me and us today.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for sharing your spirit and your wisdom and your thoughts and your journey.
Thank you.
How can people get in touch with you?
I'm on Instagram, Ultra Shannon, and Twitter is Run 100 Miles, Mom. Or Facebook is Shannon Farag Reefer.
Okay. Well, thank you again for being here. Truly, truly inspirational, and I wish you all the best with your health, and I hope that you're on the path in the end of October
be at that race.
I have no doubt of that.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay, and that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us here on LA Talk Radio. I'll be back next Wednesday, and in the meantime, stay curious, not critical. Remember, it's not what you're eating that is the real problem. It's what's eating at you.
Thank
See you soon. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Bye.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.